Thank you. Let me begin by thanking the organizers for putting together this nice meeting and for giving me the opportunity to speak here. And as it has been announced, I will talk about brain dynamics and CFT backgrounds. Well, that's sort of a bit abstract. I mean, it sort of addresses questions that have been coming up over the last couple of days. I mean, asking what happens if we have certain configurations of brains, unstable configurations of brains, what sort of study condensates in these situations. And in my case, I will sort of focus on various backgrounds that can be constructed through exact methods of conformal field theory. Now, I should say that before I start, that this is based on work with various people on different papers. They will be more specific later on, but the names are all here. Now, of course, the use of conformal field theory techniques in studying brains, of course, motivated by the fact that many important problems involve understanding brains and the behavior of brains and dynamics on very small or strongly curved backgrounds where supergravity methods fail to work, and we have to resort to full string theory, and that is use boundary conformal field theory techniques. Now, there are essentially sort of two sort of steps in sort of using boundary conformal field theory techniques in this construction. The first, of course, just the mere construction of brains in terms of boundary conformal field theory. And that involves basically constructing or understanding the couplings between brains and closed strings, or in the more sort of worldsheet language, it involves constructing various one-point functions of closed string vertex operators in the presence of these brains. And in fact, it's rather remarkable. I mean, these sort of couplings to the brain have to satisfy various factorization constraints. It's quite remarkable that it's possible for a variety of backgrounds. I mean, there exist even universal solutions, I mean, universal prescriptions to construct these couplings. And that's basically due to Cardi. And there has been lots of work later, especially in the last couple of years, generalizing Cardi and applying it to various concrete backgrounds. So for the purpose of this talk, I will sort of assume that we understand that part and that we sort of have a number of brains constructed in these terms. I mean, that is the number of boundary conformal field theory couplings of closed strings to the brain constructed. And I will address sort of the second problem. And now what happens if we take sort of a system of brains that we have constructed in A, put them together, and well, if the configuration is unstable, eventually what happens and does this unstable configuration decay into? And so again, in the worldsheet language, that would correspond to understanding sort of randomization group flows in the space of boundary interactions. And we know, of course, that at least in a certain regime, we can typically sort of analyze this question by studying a sort of non-commutative low-energy effect of action. And well, of course, that is the natural framework of this of these non-commutative field theories. Of course, that works typically only in particular regimes of a theory. So so much for the introduction. Let me just briefly outline what I'm planning to talk about. So in fact, I decided to choose one particular example to study sort of all these questions and then later on discuss other backgrounds. So the example I will be studying are brains on SU2 or three sphere. And so what makes this geometry mildly interesting is that it's actually a curved space with a non-zero, non-vanishing Nibbler-Schwarz three form H. And of course, whenever there's a non-vanishing three form, of course, then the B field, which is potential for H, is non-vanishing too. And so we expect some kind of non-commutative geometry coming in here. So the other thing is, of course, a very symmetric space, a three sphere. And that means conformal field theory techniques, which are sort of really exploring symmetry all the time, are particularly powerful for this type of geometries. So what I will be doing about the SU2 story is I will start sort of studying the decoupling, some kind of decoupling limit. And so I will sort of explain or tell you that there's some in this decoupling limit, you have some kind of non-commutative field theory controlling these type of questions. And it's actually some kind of Young-Mills and Chern-Simons theory, some of these two, on fuzzy two spheres. And so this is, I think, basically the only sort of example of a non-commutative field theory that has been derived from string theory, except from this famous thing that we all know, the Young-Mills theory on brains in flat space. So I will talk briefly about that, and then I will start to go, of course, that works only in a particular regime, this decoupling limit, and I will briefly tell you a little bit about what you can say when you're away from the decoupling limit at a finite level or size of the sphere. And that story will have some relation with K theory, in particular this twisted K theory. I come and make more precise statements about that later on. And then, so this part of the story, I mean, you can say that's sort of a nice and pedagogical example for, I mean, the studies of conformal field theory. And it's sort of very pedagogical because you have lots of geometrical intuition at the same time of having, I mean, using sort of non-trivial conformal field theory techniques. Also, the way conformal field theory model building works, I mean, typically you start with Vesalmino models and then you can go through various construct other backgrounds. So you expect you can learn a lot from this construction about other backgrounds. I will briefly tell a little bit about this in the final part. I'll talk a little bit about group manifolds first, I mean, generalizing beyond the SU2 case. And then I will talk about some particular coset models. That will be very brief, of course. So let me first address these brains on SU2 or S3. So the problem we are facing here is we have to construct an SU2 Vesalmino-Witten model as one coupling constant at level k coming here. We want to construct that on the upper half plane with a particular choice of boundary condition. And now in this model, as you all know, there are these chiral currents, J and J bar, chiral and anti-chiral currents. And the type of boundary condition one is sort of wants to study here is the condition that these two currents are equal along the boundary. And, well, you can construct these currents, of course, in terms of the group-valued field, G, which is now a field sort of essentially on the upper half plane and taking values on the group G. And by the equation of motion, this combination is the chiral current, and this combination is an anti-chiral current. We are really equating or requiring that along the boundary, which is the real line, these two things are just the same. So in fact, you may say at first, I mean, it looks a little bit like Neumann boundary condition in flat space, but there's a subtlety about this minus sign in the definition, then you may think it's probably directly a boundary condition, but neither of this is true. Actually, what really sort of the geometry is that is behind this this boundary condition is the following. What you have is what you're actually describing are brains which wrap, I mean, we have brains on S3 which wrap the conjugacy classes on this three sphere, or in other words, it's typically some two spheres on that three sphere, or in the extreme cases, the pole. I mean, it's just zero, I mean, point-like objects sitting at the poles. I mean, this is the type of brain that you construct, describe in this thing. And this can be understood by just analyzing this equation here, ordering, I mean, the terms according to normal derivatives and tangential derivatives, and just looking at what this relation means. So it's not really difficult construction to see that. And in addition, these brains turn out to carry some B field, and this B field really is the potential for the Vesalmino three form in the background. So this is basically what the geometry is behind. And one doesn't really have to know that. In fact, it turns out that you can really, as I said before, use techniques of conformal field theory to really construct exactly these backgrounds. So the solution was essentially given by Cardi, and then later, just 2 years ago, it was something added by Runkel. And so what they teach us is that, in fact, there exist a finite number of boundary theories that you can construct with this type of gluing condition. So actually, this is a standard rule in Cardi construction, is that there are as many brains that you can construct as there are sectors for the chiral algebra that you have. In this case, that's the Kac-Moody algebra, SU2 Kac-Moody algebra, and has, as we all know, K plus 1 representations. And for some reason, this just the same. I mean, these representations are one-to-one correspondence with the boundary theories that you can construct. Now, in this case, one knows a lot more. One knows the precise partition function for all these boundary theories. One knows the open string operator product expansion. So there's really full construction of that model. And as I said, they are labeled essentially by label runs from 0, 1, half, 1, and k over 2. And they can be associated just to this picture that I've drawn here. So alpha equals 0 describes really a sort of brain sitting, point-like brain sitting at the south pole of the three sphere. And then alpha 1 half is a very small brain, sort of close to spherical brain close to the south pole, and so on and so forth, up to alpha k over 2 as a brain sitting at minus e. Now, so this is an exact construction of this theory, and it should replace for us, I mean, when we describe brains and want to understand effective action in flat space, all we need, of course, is, as we know, is is the propagator in the theory, and then we can use Vick theorem, just we're dealing with the free field theory, to really compute correlators and derive the effective action. Now, this construction of the exact interacting conformal field theory that we have replaces sort of this propagator, and we can now, with that in mind, we can start to sort of evaluate various correlation functions. Now, it turns actually out that, maybe I should remind you first of, we know that, of course, when we do that in flat space, what we find is that in a particular, namely in the decoupling limit, all the correlation function can be expressed to this integral of a Moyal-Weil product of functions. Now, there's a very similar story that appears here, namely when we evaluate the correlation function and send the k, the level, to infinity, it turns out that all the correlation functions are determined by essentially sort of taking integrals over product of functions on the fuzzy two-sphere. So let me make that slightly more precise. So what you do is actually you have to first study sort of correlation function of these tachyonic vertex operators in this theory. Now, there's a slight modification as opposed to this the standard case of brains in flat space. Then we're used that the tachyonic vertex operators that we have are sort of in one-to-one correspondence with eigenfunction of linear momentum. Now, in this case, because of the spherical symmetry, we expect them to be in correspondence with eigenfunctions of the angular momentum. However, it turns out that these tachyonic vertex operators, they are assigned to angular momentum, but the angular momentum is sort of cut off depending on the label alpha of the theory. So there's some cutoff. I mean, large angular momenta are really cut off. There are no vertex operators, tachyonic vertex operators in the theory that would have larger angular momentum. And so then you can start computing this correlation function and take this limit k to infinity in which all the anomalous dimensions vanish. And you find that, indeed, this correlation function can be expressed as a trace of the product of matrices. And these matrices are just assigned to these vertex operators in the following. So these are matrices of size 2 alpha plus 1. So the size of the matrices depends on the label alpha. And when you have matrices of label of size 2 alpha plus 1, I mean 2 alpha plus 1 cross 2 alpha plus 1, they carry a standard action by conjugation of SU2. You can decompose it into multiplets, and you find, of course, the content is there's a scalar and a vector multiplet and so on up to 2 alpha. And the things that span these multiplets are sort of matrices. And this is the matrices that appear here. So to each vertex operator, you associate a very particular matrix. And then you compute the product of matrices and take the trace of that. And that's going to give you this large k limit of the correlation function. Now, one example is if we have alpha equal 1/2. And these are 2x2 matrices, and we have just 2, a 0, and vector multiplet, and then this is just the identity. Of course, it's always just the identity, and this is Pauli matrices. And so in this case, we would just take products of identity and Pauli matrices, take the trace, and that would evaluate us the correlator in that large K regime. Now, having that statement, which of course is analogous to the statement that in the decoupling limit for flat space, we have everything expressible in terms of Moyal-Weil product, we can now start computing the effective action in that theory. And it will involve, of course, gauge fields, AA, which are sort of, I introduced Chen-Patton degrees of freedom. So our connections are basically matrices, M by M matrices, with entries being sort of functions on the fuzzy sphere, that is matrices of size 2 alpha plus 1. And the effective action that one can really compute then in terms of doing just the standard computation looks as follows. It has two parts, basically. It has some part here that looks like a Young-Mills theory and the part here that looks like a sort of Chern-Simon theory. In fact, this first part is made up from some curvature, which is this form. There's a little sort of linear piece added that you need in order to render this theory gauge invariant. And then there's a Chern-Simon piece. It also has a mask term here. And again, that same reason. I mean, in order to have this theory here, gauge invariant, you have to add this mask term here. But the way that these two things are added in this action is just that the mass terms cancel from the sum of these two things. So no mass term in this string effective action. So this was the first result sort of I announced before, I mentioned before, namely that in this case we have an effective action that we can just describe sort of the theory in this decoupling limit, and that is given by some kind of Young-Mills and Chern-Simon theory on the fuzzy sphere. Of course, then it's sort of standard to work out the equations of motion. And what you find is, of course, that you can find solutions of the equations of motion given by representations of SU2. And while depending on the context, they have different interpretations. But if you start, for instance, with a stack of M brains, which sit, point-like brains, which sit at the origin or at the south pole of our three sphere, then what it means when we sort of take a solution which is an irreducible representation, M-dimensional representation of SU2, what happens is that this sort of this stack of brains sort of blows up, of course, in this into this finite two-sphere. With the size of the two sphere given, or the alpha label given by M minus 1 over 2. Of course, that is obviously related to this this Myers effect, and just now in the situation where we have the Neverschwarz field in the background. So this is as much as I wanted to say about this decoupling limit. And now the obvious question, of course, is to ask, well, how much of this would survive when we go away from this k to infinity limit? How much can we understand about the theory when we discuss it at finite k? And in fact, this is sort of possible using a very old techniques or results, at least for constant condensates. When we turn on the constant gauge field, of course, the theory before was also for non-constant gauge fields, but let's sort of restrict for this next on this transparency for constant gauge fields. So let's choose the gauge field AA to be some given by some SU2 representation lambda A, just a set of representation SU2 representation matrices. And then what we want to understand is, of course, the perturbation of a theory, which is given by this adding sort of this term to the two-dimensional action, which is sort of coupling. I mean, this is sort of our constant gauge field here, and it's coupled, or it's multiplied with the sort of velocity of the string endpoints with JA. So this is the type of perturbation we want to study in order to understand a sort of constant condensates on the brain. Now, in fact, this problem has been studied, well, essentially some long since the 70s, in fact, early 70s, late 60s, in relation with the Kondo model, which is a problem that where you study sort of the effect of magnetic impurities on conduction properties of some material. And there, I mean, there's some effect of these magnetic impurities due to the coupling of sort of impurity spin, the spin of the impurity, with the spin current of the conduction electrons. And people have sort of developed lots of techniques in order to deal with this. And of course, that was really the basic motivation for Wilson to start all this randomization group analysis. And so essentially, one can use all these old results to understand basically what happens at finite k when we turn on constant condensates. And the story is actually summarized in this, or the result is summarized in this nice picture, which is really what one would expect. When we put a stack of these point-like objects of stack of size 2 alpha plus 1 at the south pole of our three sphere, it really blows up and gives some two sphere now on that finite three sphere of size or with label alpha. So this is sort of somehow the natural extrapolation from what we saw in the decoupling regime, now established for the finite k case when the three sphere has a finite size. But from this we can see the following when we study what charge conservation implies, that of course the charge, the brain that wraps this sphere of label alpha, it's just built up from two alpha plus one zero brains. Of course that means that it has a charge two alpha plus one, a zero brain charge two alpha plus one, that's the charge of that brain. But eventually, so the charge is just a number of zero brains you need to construct this this spherical brain. But eventually, of course, you will, I mean, add more and more brains down here, and it will blow up and sort of become smaller and smaller brains. Eventually, you will just end up there at the North Pole with a single zero brain at the North Pole. And of course, a single zero brain at the North Pole will essentially have one zero brain charge because it's a single zero brain. And that tells you that the charge actually must be does not take values in integers, but it's just integer mod something, mod n times z. And actually, you can compute that. So you find that this charge takes really values in Zn, where n is actually k plus 2. I didn't specify that here, but that should be k plus 2. So this is really the group of charges in this background that you find in this background. And now you can start connecting it with this proposal of Bauknecht and Mattei. So what Bauknecht and Mattei looked at was really the situation when we have a curved background with a non-vanishing Neverschwarz free form, and which is not torsion. I mean, it's an element H in H3 integer, third integer cohomology, but it's not torsion. And for this case, they proposed that sort of the charge groups are given by a sort of twisted K theory. There's some version of K theory that really feels the presence of this H field, and that is appropriate to discuss the non-torsion part, which is definitely, in our case, we have a non-torsion three field. And as you can compute, in fact, in case of SU2, you can compute this twisted K theory. And I first learned the result from Dan Fried, and then later from Brunner and Moore, I learned how to compute it. That really the answer for this is just ZN. So it really agrees with what we found here. So we find in this particular example that the charge group that we obtained from this kind of dynamical investigation agrees with this twisted K group. Okay, so here I'm at the end of this SU2 discussion. And let me summarize. We've essentially done two things. I mean, I've sort of looked at this decoupling regime. I showed you this this one example of a non-commutative field theory that can be obtained from the string theory, which goes sort of beyond the study of brains in flat space. And then in the second part, I sort of discussed a little bit on this finite K case and connected it to this K groups. Now, one obvious thing, of course, is to generalize the story and discuss other group manifolds. We may say at first that might be might not be so interesting now that we understand basically SU2, what can happen for SU3 or other groups. Now, at first, it's true that you can have lots of brains in this geometry which wrap conjugacy classes as the spheres we had before in these point-like objects. And of course, their analysis goes just as in the case of SU2. I mean, just the same story. You could more or less just rewrite what I've told you before. Well, this case has no change, and you find in particular that all these brains are just the bound states of zero brains. So whatever their geometry is, you can just build them up from these point-like objects. But in this case, there are other, turns out there are other configurations other possible brains. I mean, brains can actually wrap not only conjugacy classes, but sort of what is called twined conjugacy classes. And that's related to the fact that there is some, typically a group admits some non-trivial outer automorphisms, and whenever such a thing appears, we can construct brains which wrap other objects. Now, well, I won't probably go through the definition, but let's just say for SU3, for instance, the typical conjugacy class is six-dimensional, whereas the typical twined conjugacy class is one family of twined conjugacy classes, some seven-dimensional thing, generically. And in this case, it turns out one can still sort of analyze the dynamics for the constant condensates. I mean, it's not known, I mean, how this, I mean, this first part of the analysis, I mean, the decoupling limit is not known, but I mean, the constant condensates can be analyzed. One can sort of study what it implies on charge conservation. And so we have done that for SUN, and we found that basically the charge group consists of two parts. There's one part, one group ZN with N given by this complicated formula, in terms of the background data. And then this comes from the brains wrapping conjugacy classes. And then there's a second contribution that comes from brains wrapping these twined conjugacy classes. And also here, one can make predictions on this N prime. It just divides N. We cannot say more than this. The question is, natural question is, does that also agree with the twisted K theory? Unfortunately, these groups have not been computed yet beyond SU3, but at least for SU2. But at least for SU3, you can make, I mean, you know something about these groups, and in fact, that is sort of gives a strong check in the case of SU3, and beyond SU3, I don't think it has been checked very well. So that's about SU2, about other groups, and then the second part I wanted to tell is what can you now do in terms of going beyond group manifolds and sort of going through the standard construction conformal field theory and study coset models. Now, a particular nice, from a point of view, a particular nice set of coset models would be a coset model of this type. I mean, definitely they're all N equals 2 superconformal field theory of this Kazama-Suzuki quotient. They're particularly nice quotients anyway. And in particular example of that would be for N equals 1, then you obtain essentially supersymmetric minimal N equal 2 supersymmetric minimum models. Now, in this case, as I told you before, that essentially the brains in this background that you can put in the supersymmetric minimal model are classified by representation, or in one-to-one correspondence with representations of the chiral algebra. So we all know what the representation of chiral algebra are classified by. They're given by these triples, LMS, with this constraints. So we have a set of brains in this geometry. I mean, well, I shouldn't say in this geometry, in this minimal model. And so you can again ask, I mean, what happens about randomization group flows? What are instability? I mean, where do theories flow to? And in fact, that can now be answered based on what we've just said before. You can now start this from the Young-Mills plus Chern-Simon sphere and the Fuzzy 2 sphere and do a reduction by these relations, which essentially tell you that you forget about one dimension and then impose that the other things, the other two guys are independent of L3 up to this term, which sort of feels a little bit the curvature. And in this way, you can understand sort of the large K behavior of randomization group flows, particular randomization group flows in this in these minimal models. And in particular, it's then easy to see, for instance, that all the brains, I mean, with label LMS, with arbitrary L, can be obtained as bound states of things with label zero. And well, in a similar way, you can construct, analyze lots of other backgrounds. In particular, we have also looked at, I mean, already almost a year ago at minimal models, I mean, without supersymmetry, that is, in fact, well, story that, okay. So, well, let me briefly just conclude at this point. I'm not sure how much time I have, but I think it's about time for conclusion. So, the summary of this is, of course, pretty much the plan. So if I find the plan, I can use that to summarize. So I think I've probably fulfilled or gone through all the things I've promised you on this transparency. We have discussed basically brains and SU2 as a very sort of nice pedagogical example to understand this kind of analysis. We have looked at this decoupling limit and seen this this matrix model appearing from the string theory. And we have looked at the constant condensate and related that to the K theory. And then I've briefly discussed generalizations. The group other group manifolds, which was particularly interesting because of this appearance of these twined conjugacy classes, or brains wrapping twined conjugacy classes. And I've looked at coset models and more specifically at the n equals 2 super symmetric minimum models. Now, let me just mention briefly a few further directions. Of course, ultimately, would like to understand sort of string, certain string compactification in particular. Do analysis of this type for Gapner models. Another sort of interesting problem is to understand sort of this large K analysis for the twined conjugacy classes that I mentioned. I told you that in this case we can only analyze the constant condensates, but we don't really know what happens for, let's say, slowly varying field configurations. In fact, a lot about this geometry of these twined conjugacy classes is not understood, and that might be interesting to look at. Of course, there's an obvious problem of sort of going to understand, well, brains and dynamics of brains on the non-compact spaces such as SL2C. And of course, based on the recent progress in understanding sort of closed-string backgrounds, non-compact closed-string backgrounds that was we heard about earlier this day, and I mean, basically due to the work of Guri Maltafina, that might be interesting to study. And, well, also I mentioned, I mean, that there's a lot to understand about this twisted K groups, in fact, to compute them and maybe also relate them to this story and the pictures that I gave before. Let me just maybe remark in the end that, of course, we will just hear in the next talk, I mean, somehow that that this problem B, I mean, of the twine conjugate classes might be important to understand also in relation to understanding brains on SL2C. So I thank you for your attention.
When you get the fuzzy sphere,
yes.
Do you actually have a limit where the non-commutativity survives but the dimensions go to zero? Or do they go to, or do they vanish at the same rate?
Where it survives non-commutativity?
Where the non-commutativity survives, but the dimensions vanish.
But the dimensions, yeah, that's what I'm saying. I mean, when you keep sort of this label alpha fixed and do the K to infinity, dimensions vanish, but I mean, you stay with finite matrices, I mean, with matrix algebras of finite size.
Okay.
So, yeah, it stays non-commutative.
When you had your Chern-Simons theory, I was confused because you seemed to be in dimension two.
Right. I mean, okay. I would say some sort of Chern-Simons-like theory. I mean, it has. Of course, we have three fields basically. I mean, two. When you can think of sort of connection parallel to the world of the brain, then there's a scalar transverse, and I just put them in this one triple A0, A1, A2, A3.
So it's like a coupling phi dot f, where phi is a scalar in the adjoint representation, and f is f mu. Is that the right interpretation?
No, I was just referring. I mean, if you look at the form of this thing, I mean, I wasn't really sort of pulling apart. I mean, I sort of used the same letter. I mean,
the one normal to the sphere we might want to call a scalar field, let's say phi.
I understand, but I just put the scalar field and the connection, so to say, in this A 1 2 3.
But if we separated it out, it probably would look like phi times.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, I think that would happen. But I was just referring to this form of the action, which is very much like.
In the next problem, do you understand why you got zk plus 2 instead of zk for the charges for SU2?
The shift to k plus 2. Yeah, I was not very particular. Not very. You're asking about the shift. I mean,
yes.
Why the shift appears. In fact, what you see, I mean, you can basically do that on. I told you that there are k plus 1 positions in between, and what you see is when we expand these things, we end up with an anti-brain at this opposite pole, and then when you compute it, it's just k plus 2, the difference.
No, technically, I understand you got
k
plus 2.
Good.
But when you compare to k sub h, at first sight, k sub h for the SU2WCW model at level h would have given z sub k, not z sub k plus 2.
Well, of course, I mean, at this point, I'm sort of going in a supersymmetric situation. Of course, then it's related to this shift that you have. I mean, when you construct the bosonic current out of the original, I think it is related to this shift. So really, you apply these conformal field theory techniques then to the bosonic current and not to the original current. I mean, you first add this fermionic piece and do all this analysis after decoupling from the fermions. And so there's where the shift comes in. It's related to this shifting.
Well, it would be very interesting to know the general picture. If you have a general space-time with an H field, it's been claimed that the K theory has to do with K sub H, not K sub H prime, where H prime is a twisted version of H. I don't have any idea what general thing would produce to what you found for SU2.
I certainly don't. I mean, I just reported on this explicit computation, but I think there's a lot to understand about this for more general situations.
Yeah. Right? I'm not at all suggesting that the answer isn't what you said, but I'm baffled about what it would be in general.
Yeah, so that's the same with me.
The last thing, I'm sorry to ask so many questions. For SU3, where you got that ZN1 times ZN2, if I understood correctly, isn't it possible that you didn't find all the brains?
Oh, yeah, I should remember. If you looked at the transparency, I had some points, dot, 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 right? It's possible. I mean, it could be that, I mean, as I told you, conformal field theory should certainly, I mean, the most easy thing is to construct brains with maximal symmetry somehow.
Yes.
And I just discussed the brains with maximal symmetry. And it's possible that you would just not see all the brains. For instance, one example, I think, where it's not known, if you take S3 cross S3, and have different sizes of these S3, I think then conformal field theory cannot produce all the brains with all the possible charges, because you have, basically in this case, you have two charges, independent charges, and conformal field theory cannot deal with this, except if you have brains of three species of exactly the same size. I mean, there are examples where you don't find them among the maximal symmetric cases.
I'm confused about one more thing for SU3.
Yeah.
Did you simply add together the even and odd dimensional brains?
Oh, yeah, I did that, yeah.
So the answer you reported was sort of the sum of type 2i and type 2b.
Right, right. There's no contribution. I mean, if you do the twisted K theory computation, this is in K1, and there's no contribution in K0, which is sort of consistent, I think, because there's...
For SU2, that's true, but for SU3, it doesn't appear to be true.
Well, for SU2, the contributions come in... Well, that you don't see, of course, in the conformal field theory computation, but the contributions come... I mean, part of it comes in K0, and part of it comes in K1. Which agrees with this. I told you for SU3, we have either six or seven dimensional things, so the shift in dimension
so
is just one.
So for SU3, you have both K and K1.
Oh, yeah, right.
Okay.
Right.
Thanks.
More questions? Okay, if there are no further questions, let us thank Professor Shomras again.